Hello and welcome to another edition of the Marlena program. This is the program for the week of August 27th. Well, good evening and welcome all. And first, let me very much apologize for last week's show going somewhere, but not here. I have no idea. Oh, my goodness gracious. We were just unable to. I could have sat here and played audio for you for 2 hours, but I couldn't talk to you. And finally, at the last bit of time, we were able to get it repaired for this week. So we're very, very apologetic that that happened last week and glad that it didn't happen this week, because we have a fabulous show for you coming up tonight. Let me first do a little bit of housekeeping, tell you about the second hour, and then tell you about the first hour. If you're listening to the program at any time other than the hours of 9 to 11 Eastern and 6 to 8 Pacific in North America on a Sunday night, anytime other than that, it's replay. Please enjoy. This is going to be an information-packed program. So get your note takers, your pens and pencils and slates and styli and whatever you use out, because my guests in the first hour are going to have a lot of things to share with you. In the second hour, we're going to hear a pre-recorded interview with my friend and a friend to the Marlena program, Stephen Guerra. Stephen is the secretary for the National Baseball Association, and unless you've been living in a cave, you probably know that ACB Radio World is broadcasting the final game of the 32nd NBBA World Series championship game next Saturday, September 1st. And we got promos for that. We got a contest to give away a Victor Reader stream. Oh, my goodness. I just don't know how we're going to get it all in. Let's talk about my guests here for the first hour. I am so delighted to have been able to work this out. Now, anyone who's listened to my show for any length of time, you know that very often one of my first, if not my first call, comes from Albany, New York, and it comes from Frank Casey. No, we don't have Frank Casey on tonight. We have Kathy Casey. Kathy, welcome to Marlena.
Good evening, Marlena, and good afternoon to you, and good morning to those that are listening around the world.
Yes, I know, I forgot to say, if you're listening anytime other than 1 to 3 UTC, thanks for reminding me of that. All the stuff I have to get in here tonight, Kathy. If you're listening at any time UTC other than 1 to 3, then it's a repeat for you, too. Boy, I need the guests to keep me straight. And, Kathy, you are the president of the New York affiliate of CCLV?
That is correct. The affiliate was formed back in March, actually back in November of last year, and it is the New York State Council of Citizens with Low Vision.
And also joining us tonight, because, you know, if we have the top dog, we need the top dog's best work and partner. And when you're the president, that is the vice president, and that's what I think Pratik Patel is, the vice president of the New York Council of Citizens with Low Vision. Hey, Pratik, how are you?
Hello, Marlena. Hello, everyone. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning. Thank you very much for the invitation. And just a brief correction, I'm actually not one of the elected offices of CCLVI.
Well, I just promoted you.
Well, I don't mind. I'm sure the current incumbent might mind.
Well, sorry about that, current incumbent. Oh, well. I don't know where I got that idea. I guess you just know so much, Pratik, that I just think, well, surely he is.
I am the second vice president for ACBNY affiliate for the ACB. So.
Ah, that's where I got the confusion. Okay, all right. Well, Kathy, let's start off a little bit. What is CCLV? What is the organization in general?
Okay. The CCLV is the Council of Citizens with Low Vision. Those individuals who are legally blind that do have some vision, which you know that most people, I think, would know that people who are legally blind have a visual acuity of 20 over 200. Or less. Now, the Council of Citizens of Low Vision is also is an affiliate of ACBNY, but it is also a branch of the national organization, which is Council of Citizens with Low Vision International, which was formed back in 1972 or 1979, and I am also a board member on that affiliate also. And we try to encourage activities and any other legislation that deal with low vision, such as pedestrian safety, magnification, low vision aids. The big thing now is with Medicare and Medicaid not being able to fund machinery that requires lenses, such as video magnifiers, magnifying glasses, handheld magnifiers, anything like that. They were trying to fight that because they don't want to cover that.
Has Medicare ever covered anything like that?
You know, unfortunately, I don't know a whole lot about the rules of Medicare and Medicaid, but I believe they did at one point, and they want to change the rules so that they don't want to cover it now, and that's not a good thing because that type of equipment is very costly, you know, especially for older people with macular degeneration, which is a big thing. And they need that type of equipment, and we really need to be diligent in fighting that.
Is not the leading cause of blindness or visual impairment, is aging not the leading cause?
Well, aging is one, but actually diabetes is also a leading cause of blindness.
So I'm wondering, has CCLVII, should I do two eyes? I guess so.
No.
I'm wondering if they have reached out to, you know, some of the retired, you know, the AARP groups, those strong advocacy groups who are of the age range of folks who tend to deal with macular degeneration.
Yeah, I believe they have. Patricia Beattie, Pat Beattie is also very highly involved with that, and she's been working very diligently on that also.
Yeah. It, you know, it seems to me that there's power in numbers, and it seems to me that once this population understands that they could truly be impacted by this change in rule or new rule, whichever one it is, that they might want to get on this bandwagon with CCLVI. So what made you decide in New York to start the New York chapter of CCLVI?
Well, what we did was, I have to say, Mike Godino was the one who actually pushed it, too, is you only needed 5 members or 10 members to form a chapter. So we got the 10 members, and I wrote up the Constitution, and we brought it before the ACBNY membership, the board, and the board approved it. And with that, we sent it to the national organization, the membership chapter development person there. And after several telephone conversations and explanations, was approved this summer at the national convention in Minneapolis. So we now are an official charter. Chartered member.
Oh, so that's interesting. So you You became a charter member of the National CCLVI.
That's correct.
That's interesting because Guide Dog Users, of course, has state affiliates, and they don't do it that way. You know, if you are a state affiliate, and then you're a GDUI member. I want to ask Pratik a question. Pratik, as the second vice president in New York, was there any concern from the New York affiliate that, oh my gosh, you know, if we're going to start another special interest group, and are we going to have time for them at our conventions? And what, was there any resistance at all?
Not at all, Marlena. I think we have always thought that ACB members who are low vision, especially, and you know, we know that it's a very much a growing population, especially because of aging-related and diabetes-related, as Kathy mentioned. And since it is such a large concern of ours, we were committed to making sure that New York, as an affiliate, would ensure that anything that needs to be done could be done in advocating for low-vision individuals or members of ACB. And if we needed to carve out additional time for CCLVI at our conventions or provide help in any way we could in programming, we are absolutely committed to do that, and we had no concerns regarding that.
That's very interesting and very, very good to hear. I was very impressed when I went to California's convention to stream their spring convention for them. My gosh, they have a ton of special interest affiliates, and I think it's a very good thing. I think it's a wonderful way to attract new people. I think it keeps your organization vibrant and in touch with what's going on from many different perspectives at the national level. Well, Kathy, let me come back to you and ask you a couple of questions here about what do you do? What do you guys have special programming? Do you do outreach? What are some of the projects that you've done?
Actually, our first official convention, if you want to call it, will be this September, an affiliate in association with our state convention, and on September 28th at 10 a.m. we'll be holding our first convention meeting. We'll have our regular business meeting, and then we have a speaker coming in from the Office of Fire Prevention and Control to coordinate with our theme for our convention is Safety First, and they're going to speak on fire safety in public buildings and hotels and high-rises. And we're hoping that, you know, we hope we get a good turnout for that. And some of the projects, you know, I know our local chapter here, we're, you know, working in conjunction with ACBNY with pedestrian safety, audible traffic signals, and we'll be working, looking for other projects to be working on when we meet in September.
Well, that's fascinating, and let me just tell you, don't be discouraged or disheartened. I founded the Guide Dog Special Interest Group here in Washington, and the first couple of years, I thought, oh, dear. But now GDUWS is the largest affiliate of WCB, so This can be a very good strategy for bringing in members. Let me ask you, Kathy, about kind of the beginnings of it. You know, if someone is listening, and by the way, the line is open. We've just opened it. If you want to talk with Pratik or Kathy, the telephone number is 866-666-7926. I am directing my questions right now to Kathy, but I am going to be asking Pratik some questions in a bit about the general NYACB convention coming up. So feel free to call in and chat with either one of them. But when you first got this idea, Kathy, how did you begin to get it organized? If someone is out there listening and they think, wow, I want to do this in my chapter, what do they need to know?
Basically, what I did was I had a sort of informational meetings, interest. I put the word out, and people that are interested in forming a chapter, we had a meeting at the restaurant and the hotel to get a feel of how many people would be interested in being in a chapter if we formed it, and would there, you know, did we feel that there was an interest in forming a chapter, and would it be, you know, would it be viable in New York State? And then we met again in, I believe it was our legislative weekend we had in March, and we got together in one of somebody's room, I think it was, and did the same thing again. And then finally, I sat down and did a combination of our state constitution and CCLVI's constitution, and put together our own constitution, just change a little bit of the wording, and put our own constitution together. And that's basically how it got started. Just as easy as that. And that's what I would tell people, that if they're interested in doing that is to, you know, draw your group together and say, you know, put it, if you're on an email list, put a note out on the email list, say, you know, we're interested in forming a chapter, you know, how many people would be interested, we're having an informational session, please come and join us, blah, 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 and, you know, take it from there.
Now, some people might be a little concerned and say, oh, I could never do a constitution. I've never done that before. Where can they find resources, or did you just take the constitutions? I mean, this is what I did for guide dog users. I just took the main GDUI constitution and the WCB constitution, and I, you know, pulled and changed a few words here and there and copied this and changed that and came up with a constitution. Is that how you did it?
That's how I did it.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I did it. That's
Yeah, go ahead, Pratik.
If I can add something, it's very important to know that anybody who's interested, there are many, many ACB members who are very good at constitutions and bylaws, and, you know, there are a lot of members who are willing to help chapters or individuals who want to put something like this together. So know that people have support not only in your state, but also throughout the nation. So don't hesitate to ask for help on the ACBL list or the chat list or wherever it may be, and you will find people more than willing to help.
Yes, absolutely. That's an excellent point, is that, you know, our own Constitution and Bylaws Committee probably has folks on it who'd be willing to help you. So, you know, don't, when someone says they wrote a constitution, it doesn't mean, at least in my case, that I knew any more about writing a constitution than perhaps some of you listening. And, you know, there are resources out there. And one of the wonderful things about ACB is that the folks are always willing to step up and be helpful. Kathy, do you think that the CCLVNY group will be holding additional events as it grows, perhaps low vision clinic type things or equipment demos?
I would certainly hope so. I would certainly hope that, you know, there would be an interest out there. I know not last year, but 2 years ago, we held a low vision seminar and invited, we had a panel of a low vision specialist and a rehab teacher and a mobility instructor, and we really did people enjoyed it. We try to get the word out to the, you know, to the public, to invite like the senior service centers and agencies for the blind, and try to get the word out to the public and have them come in and kind of learn some information. And there's also the National Institute for the Blind. We got literature from them and put that out, and stuff on macular degeneration and diabetes and low vision and all. I think people enjoyed it, and it was very informative. I learned something out of it.
What about the issue? And we've talked about this in Washington on our email list, but what about the issue of the newly blinded person who really needs to stop driving? And just the family can't take the keys away. The person isn't safe, you know, to be driving. Does your affiliate try, either at the national level or will you try at the state level, to put out some public information about this issue?
You know, go ahead, Patrick. I'll let you cover that one.
Sure. That is a major concern that we've been discussing for the past few years. And one of the things that we've discussed at the New York affiliate level, as well as I know half this has been discussed at the national CCLVI level, is doing an educational campaign for physicians. Because the first line of defense against individuals driving who are not qualified or not otherwise qualified to do so are the physicians. And many times physicians are really reluctant to either report when they need to or advise. Because many people, when they become newly blinded, I think their first contact with people who can tell them that they're not qualified are the physicians. And, you know, perhaps it's for emotional reasons or whatever the reasons may be. That's the population that we really need to target. And it's an issue that I know CCLVI on the national level is looking to address, and I'm sure we will be addressing it at the New York State level.
I believe there are some states, and I believe Oregon may be one of them, that has a requirement that a physician report when a patient has been diagnosed as being legally blind and unable to drive.
Yeah, I think a lot of states do, but whether or not physicians actually do it, that's an important issue for us to deal with.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a hot-button topic because, on the one hand, you know, you certainly want these people off the road. But on the other hand, until they really come to grips with who they now are, It doesn't hit home to them. It makes no sense to them. And I think, yeah, go ahead, Kathy.
No, I was going to say a lot of times, too, that, like Pratik said, we have to educate the doctors. And I think we, having low vision ourselves, are the one to educate the doctors, because they know that either you can see or you can't see.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're in the middle, they just don't understand it. And you try to explain it to them, and you say, well, I can see, but not that good.
Yeah.
And this is something that, you know, we really need to work on.
I want to talk about that in the middle a bit, Kathy. It's fortuitous that you should have said that, because that was my next series of things that I wanted to touch on. And I am not low vision. I am no vision. And so I have never been in the middle. But it occurs to me to think that growing up as a kid with low vision must have been awfully difficult. Did you have issues with kind of being not blind and not sighted as you were growing up? And if you did, how did you deal with them?
One of the things that I dealt with, well, had the problem with, was in school, where I'd had to sit in the front row. And for some reason, and God knows why, but of course every month they'd have a different seating arrangement, and they wanted the kids to sit in a different seat, and I'd end up in the back of the room. And I would tell them, I need to be in the front of the room. I need to see the board. And even if I sat in the front row, I still couldn't really see the board. And they just did not quite understand that. When I got into high school, when they finally realized, oh, we can get large print books in the English class, they would get me the books, but then they gave me an assignment to read, and the assignment, the part I was supposed to read, wasn't in the book.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so that doesn't help either.
Oh, my gosh. And, you know, I don't know your age, but I'm guessing that, like me, you didn't have all the wonderful devices that are now available, you know, to go through school with in terms of, you know, alternative formats and lots of choices for video magnifiers and so forth. And so that must have made it extremely challenging for you. But did you ever feel that you were just left out, that you were, you know, you were neither fish nor fowl?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, you don't fit in, you get teased, you get, you know, four eyes and bottle, you know, Coke bottle glasses.
Yeah.
And of course I had a weight issue back there too, so of course I had a double whammy, and of course my parents would say, you know, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. But of course they do. So
yeah,
that type of thing.
If there's someone listening to this program, either live or in a rebroadcast, and they are younger and they are low vision and they are kind of feeling like that, sort of neither fish nor fowl, and you can't, you just don't fit. What could you tell them?
Oh, Pratik, what would you do? You're a little younger than I am. You might have a little more insight into this.
Well, I think the best thing to do is, you know, try and get to a community of support. These days, I think it's not that difficult to find a lot of individuals who may have low vision. And ACB, for example, you know, a lot of affiliates have low vision members, and they are always willing to help or talk to you. You know, that's a very difficult, I know it's a very difficult thing to do for people to go out and reach out and find a community. When I grew up, I have a slightly unique story. I actually grew up in India. When I grew up, I had deteriorating vision sight, but at the same time, there were no peers who, I actually knew no blind person in my life because the community just wasn't there. I lived in a small town and grew up in an environment. And it was actually when I came to the U.S. that I actually started meeting a lot of blind people. And it really changed my life, knowing other blind folks. It may seem like that it's a stigma to know other blind or visually impaired individuals, but it's really not. It gives you a sense of community. It gives you a sense of empowerment that you don't have otherwise.
Very well put. I'm going to ask you guys to hang on 1 second. We have a couple of sponsors, and the line is open at 866-666-7926. And when we come back, I want to get Pratik to tell us what's coming up at the New York ACB convention. We'll be right back.
ACB Radio Interactive's birthday is coming soon, but you could get the gift. Get into the stream of things and win the Victor Reader Stream from HumanWare and ACB Radio.
Woohoo!
You've never seen so many features in such a small package. Take your computer book and music libraries with you anywhere on a device that fits in the palm of your hand. Access Daisy and Bookshare books using Stream's built-in text-to-speech and standard Daisy navigation levels. Play and record audio files with Stream's built-in voice recorder. Store and access as many files as your removable SD flash card can hold. Enjoy the Stream for 15 hours continuously using the rechargeable and user-replaceable battery. Easily move files between the Stream and your computer. Easily access all Stream functions with highly contrasted tactile keys and audio feedback. All this can be yours thanks to the generosity of Humanware, manufacturers of the Victor Reader Stream. Send us an email message to contest@acvradio.org telling us in 75 words or less why having a Victor Reader Stream would benefit you at work, at school, at home, or at play. Be sure to include your name, address, and telephone number along with your email address. The winner will be called on the Marlena program on September 10th, just after 1 UTC. That's September 9th, just after 9 p.m. Eastern in North America. You must be available to receive the call in order to win. General ACB radio contest rules apply. For more information about the Victor Reader Stream, you can find a link on our website at www.acbradio.org. Again, the email address to send entries is contest@acbradio.org. Tell us how you would benefit from a Victor Reader Stream. Be available for that call from Marlena. And you may just be celebrating ACB Radio Interactive's birthday in a big way by winning the Victor Reader Stream for yourself.
Excludes Humanware and Corvus.
You're listening to Marlena at the mainstream of acbradio.org and WTNDLP Macomb 106.3 FM. Hi, this is Marlena. Have you been listening to ACB Radio for a while and wonder how you can help? Well, there's a Donate to ACB Radio link now available from the main page at www.acbradio.org. And thank you so much for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. All right, we are back. And we actually have a call. Let me push all the right buttons here to get everybody back into the mix. We have a call. Let's bring them on in. Hi there. Thanks for waiting. You're with Kathy Patel and Pratik and Marlena. Sorry about that.
Well, hello there, Kathy, Pratik, and Marlena. It's Daryl Shandro.
Hello, Daryl Shandro. I'm glad you could say it better than I did. Golly, I was going to say Pratik Patel because that's what I'm used to saying, but well.
But Josh says Pratik.
I know.
That's right.
I know. It says Pratik. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Pratik is such a nice name. Sorry I messed it up.
That's okay.
Hey, so what is, I know Pratik is going to weigh in on this. Hopefully, Kathy, if you use a computer considerably, you will as well. From a low vision perspective, what is your take on, CAPTCHAs and these visual multi-factor authentication schemes like security keys and so on and so forth?
Oh, I hate those things. I personally use Magic and for a low vision aid for the computer. And that doesn't seem to be a problem working with that. But those darn security keys are a pain in the neck.
You think they're more problematic for you than for a sighted user?
I don't think, it makes any difference either way, personally.
Okay, because they're a lockout for those of us that...
Okay, hang on. I think Pratik's trying to say something.
Oh, go ahead, Pratik.
Looking at it from a low vision perspective, I think since there are many different levels of low vision and different individuals have different needs, what we're finding is that depending on what software they're using, either magnification software or any kind of screen enhancement software that a low vision person may be using, CAPTCHAs may or may not be a problem. I think, many sighted people tell us that it's a problem for them because they can't see the darn things as they are. But it's a particular problem for some screen magnification software when it comes to reversing colors, when it comes to smoothing the text that's available in that graphic, and when the software is not capable of handling that, it's very difficult for many people to see. So it is very problematic.
Has CCLVI taken any steps, particularly in terms of the petition to Yahoo to support making this CAPTCHA accessible?
That's a question that I think I would probably have to get back to you on. I'll have to speak with the national affiliate.
It would be wonderful if they were able to do that. And Pat may be listening. Sometimes she does listen. She's been a guest on this show as well. So, but it would really be wonderful because it would show some support and solidarity to the other part of the community to have that kind of influence from CCLVI, both at its chapter levels and at the national level, to support that petition. Anything else, Daryl? You got quiet.
I think that about covers it. I just wanted to see what it was like from the other camp, so to speak. And I think it would be good for CCLVI to do something that helps not only part of their constituency but also totally blind people, because I know that there's often this gulf between the totally blind and low vision, and a lot of times I even find myself thinking, well, gosh, it's easy enough for you guys. All you guys need is a little bit of magnification or something.
Yeah, and I think there really is often a lot of misunderstanding about low vision from the blind community. I only went to a school for the blind for a year and a half, but one of the first things I learned at the school for the blind was that, the one-eyed man was king,
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh, if you had sight, oh, boy, you were the top dog. And I think that for me anyway, I don't understand sight. I don't, it befuddles me. I can't figure out how it works. I mean, I know technically how it works, but I can't figure out how your eyes don't just wear out. It's a weird phenomenon for me to think about sight. And even with someone who's fully sighted, I'll sometimes say to Gary, well, didn't you see that? And he'll say, no. And well, why not? You could see, but I wasn't looking. I mean, I think that in the blind community, we tend to maybe sometimes overestimate what sighted people can do, and maybe how easy it is for partially sighted people, because we just don't get it. We don't.
Yeah. And there's such variability in partial sight that it's very difficult for us to imagine, and rightly so, what kind of difficulties that a partially sighted person has.
Yeah.
Some people have difficulty with colors. Some people have difficulty with brightness, even with contrast on the screen. They like white on black as opposed to black on white, or, that type of thing, and colors bother them. Some are color blind in addition to being, partially sighted. So, there's a lot of other variables that are there instead of just in addition to just having low vision.
Well, yeah, I would invite CCLVI to climb on board, and I can be reached over on blindaccessjournal.com, everyone, so feel free to check it out.
All right. Well, thanks, Mr. Daryl.
Thank you very much, Marlena.
You take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. And the number to call is 866-666-7926. We'll have Pratik and Kathy with us till the top of the hour, which is about another 17 minutes, so there's plenty of time for you to call in and ask your question. And after Pratik and Kathy have joined us, we are going to have an interview, a pre-recorded interview with Stephen Guerra, who is the secretary for the National Beep Baseball Association. But I tell you what, my computer is going crazy tonight. It keeps jumping over to the system tray. I don't know why it wants to do that. Pratik, talk to us a bit about your upcoming convention. Where is it, when is it, and why should people attend?
Sure. This year, our convention is being hosted by our Capital District chapter in Albany, New York. And Kathy is actually one of our organizers. And so far, she's done a fantastic job.
And has put a
great program for us. Convention will happen on the weekend of September 28th, 29th, and 30th in Albany at the Clarion Hotel. And if you would like, the registration material are available. I apologize for that noise, background noise.
That's okay. Sounds like you're flying.
I'm not, but somebody else appears to be.
Sounds like you are flying, baby.
Anyway, the registration material, anybody's interested in joining us in Albany, is available on our website at www.acbny.org. This year have put a great program together, and the main activities, Kathy already mentioned Friday the 28th as the CCLVI day, where the chapter will be holding their first annual meeting, and they have put together a great list of speakers, and Kathy can tell you a little bit more about that. On Saturday, we'll have our business meeting early in the morning, and we'll take care of amendments and resolutions, as well as some additional business. And in the afternoon, after lunch, we have a panel of speakers who will be speaking on security. Is that correct, Kathy?
Yeah, it's safety first on different
safety first.
How to do pre-prepared for a disaster is basically what it is.
Right,
how to prepare for a disaster.
And then after that, we will also be holding our legislative committee, of which I'm the chair, will also be holding a 45-minute to an hour-long program specifically focusing on upcoming legislation and legislative activities for New York State. And then on Sunday, we have our annual board meeting, so people are more than welcome to join us at any of those activities. We welcome any participation, not only from folks from New York, but also from other states. We welcome anyone.
Well, that's,
and everyone.
That's quite a program. You know, back in March, I had a guest on this show, Frank Cuda, who, of course, is also a good friend, but we did an hour on disaster preparedness with a blindness perspective in mind. And if it would be of any value to you, I would be very happy to send you a copy of that file that you could have available on a few CDs for folks if they would be interested in hearing it, or they can hear it in the on-demand section on the ACB Radio website. So if that would be something that would interest you guys, just feel free to let me know.
That would be great. I'll be in touch with you offline, Marlena, and we'll make the arrangements. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was a fascinating show.
One of the other things, too, that I'd like to mention, too, is our banquet, which will be Saturday night, and Melanie Brunson from the national office will be our guest speaker.
Oh, that's great.
You know, that's why you're the organizer. I forget the most important people and the most important parts of the program.
We're also having a tour for the city of Albany. It's called the Albany Aqueducts. And it is an amphibious vehicle which goes on land and the water.
Oh, how
and
cool.
We'll be leaving at 2 o'clock, and we'll get transportation from the hotel out to the Albany Visitor Center. And It should be a lot of fun. I've been on it several times, and I guess I'll be on it again. And it's a lot of fun. And we've had, actually saw fireworks on the water, on a Father's Day tour one year. And that was cool. I'll tell you, I'd do that again if I had a chance.
That's cool.
That was cool. That was the best way to see fireworks.
How long has ACB of New York been in existence?
Let me think.
You know, you stumped me because...
Back in the 60s, I believe it was formed. So it's been at least 25 years.
It must have been when MJ was still in New York.
MJ was the one who started it. Now, if
that's
I
right.
can remember. MJ was the one who developed it. Now, MJ, please call it, and please call and confirm me, please. If you're listening, please call.
Even if you're not listening, call.
I was wondering that. I had a feeling you were going to ask that, and I said, you know, I'm going to get stumped on that one because I believe it was, I want to say 62 or 63.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah, that sounds reasonably plausible. Now, what are...
Okay, I just got corrected. Early 70s.
Early 70s. All right. Well, that's still a heck of a long time. What are some of the committees of ACBNY? If someone's listening in New York, they've not joined ACBNY, oh, I don't want to join a blindness group, you know, they just sit around and bitch and moan all the time. And what are some of the activities and committees that new people could get involved with if they joined?
Well, of course, I'm going to say this because I'm the chair of this committee, the legislative committee, which is the most important. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just joking. But I think legislation is one of the most important things that an ACB affiliate or any ACB group, any advocacy group can do, because that's one of the most important parts of working in this environment within the U.S. That's one of our committees. We have, you know, the standard fundraising, publicity, constitution, bylaws, resolutions, and quite a few others that I don't have in front of me, but we'll be happy to tell people about.
Convention committee.
Convention. So.
So there are many ways that the people can get involved. Now, does ACBNY meet once a year, or do you have two conventions?
We have one convention, excuse me. And although we do have quite a few chapters that meet around the state, most of the chapters have monthly meetings. A few of them tend to skip August because that's the summer time.
Sure.
And a lot of people are on vacation. But we have a lot of affiliate chapters that meet throughout the state in different locations. So the annual convention is not the only place where people can meet.
And do you know how many chapters you guys have?
We have, if I count quickly, I would say 6 or 7.
And they're located throughout various parts of New York State.
Parts of New York, that's correct.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Are they listed on your website? So
they are definitely listed on our website.
Okay.
People can go to www.acbny.org.
And Prateek, when did you first come to the ACBNY?
I came to ACBNY probably about 4 years ago. About 4 years ago. I'm fairly new to the organization as far as ACBNY goes, and I'm actually fairly young, and I hate to say it, but I started when I was in college, and you know, stuck with the organization, petered out for about a year and a half, and then came back into the organization.
And when you first decided to get involved, were you, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this question. I have a
That's
great...
You don't have to be polite.
Well, I at least have to pretend to try anyway. I have a great concern about attracting younger people to everything that ACB does. And one of the things, and I could say this because I'm old. I am probably... Almost old enough to be your grandmother. So,
No way. It's true.
But I have a great concern that young folks come to some of our functions and they don't see anybody under, 40. And how to keep that youth and how to attract people and say, look, you don't see anybody under 40 because we need you. I mean, what did you experience that when you first joined ACB? And if you did, what kept you coming back?
I don't think I ever did, to tell you the truth. My perspective has always been to help out wherever I can. And, whatever information that I can provide, whatever talents, as small as they may be, can be helpful to an organization, I will do that. And whether or not other members in the organization are over 40, over 50, over 60, over 80, it doesn't really matter to me. And I think it's a great concern of mine about attracting youth, attracting new members to an organization like ACB and ACBNY, or even CCLVI. And we sort of debated this question. I've seen a lot of conversation around attracting youth and young leadership, or young members. One of the things I think we don't do enough of, and I'm not exactly sure how we can do this, is to provide sufficient social opportunities for younger members. And, oftentimes when you're in college, when you're in high school, the most important thing to you is trying to be in a situation where you get some social pleasure out of it.
Yeah.
When you're part of an organization like ACB, there's always a lot of conversation going on around advocacy, around legislation, around many, it may be technical issues like democracy, constitution, and bylaws. And it may seem a bit tedious and boring to a lot of new members or student members. And it's always a challenge to attract them, but it's trying to recognize, I think one of the things we need to do as members and as an organization is to recognize what abilities young people have and trying to not use them, but to encourage them to apply towards the organization, towards ACB.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's...
And I have to say that I found in people like John Farina and Mike Godino, individuals who took an interest in me and took an interest in my growth. And that was one of the best things that I would say has happened to me.
Well, Kathy, I think that we need to clone Pratik and move him to every affiliate.
That sounds like a good idea. I agree with that. I second that motion.
Honestly, that's a wonderful perspective. And I don't know about you, Kathy, but I remember when I first got involved with ACB, and it was back in the early 70s, like 70, 71, the latest 72. I was fired up. I was like, wow, I like these people because they make sense and they want to make a difference. And I never thought about the fact that everybody was significantly older than I was. But I got into ACB along with a group of folks. We were all know-nothing kids. And we had just started the Blind Leadership Club of Boston. And, Durward McDaniel came up and talked with us and told us about ACB and the importance of being involved. And, I mean, there was just never a question for us that, yeah, this is what we want to do. But we were a group of folks, and I don't know. Have you got any thoughts on this, Kathy, as to how we attract younger folks into the organization?
I think if we do, here we talk about advocacy again, is to go into some of the college disabled students programs in the colleges and go into high schools and kind of do a student, be a mentor to a visually impaired student. And one of the things is to maybe bring them to an ACB meeting and say, you know, this is what you can do maybe when you get out of high school, you know, and get into college and kind of nurture them that way. That's
mm-hmm.
one way.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good idea. Very good idea. Well, before I let you guys go, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you want to make sure is a part of this program?
I think we pretty much covered quite a bit. How about Pratik? You got any?
I think in New York wise we covered pretty much a lot. And one thing, you know, I know Marlena probably wouldn't forgive me if I don't say this, but as a part of the work that we'll be doing with the Information Access Committee, a lot of people have seen the announcement about cell phone complaints, the process that AFB has been going through for the past few months.
Yes.
And helping individuals about filing cell phone complaints. We'll be putting out a lot more information about that, but I think folks really need to go ahead and work with AFB or work with your affiliates or work with other members to make sure that you file those cell phone complaints, because it's really important. The cell phone industry needs to hear from you, and if they don't, they really don't care.
Exactly. And if you don't file the complaint, dare I say, you have no room to complain, because this is an opportunity for any time that you've felt frustrated about access or the fact that one provider offers a phone that gives you kind of access, but not complete, and a couple of other providers, you can get full access, but you got to pay another $300 on top of that, on top of the cost of the phone, and they might not be offering the screen reader that you want as their access solution on their rebate programs. And cell phones are a huge issue among blind folks, and so now we have an opportunity to really make our voices heard, and we absolutely have to do that. And I think, Patel, if I'm right, the email address is 255action@afb.net. Is that what you recall?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, and I don't think there's a dash between the 5 and the action. So
No, there isn't.
I think it's just 255action@afb.net. And, you know, let's let our voices be heard and show the cell phone industry that, in fact, hey, we are here and you are not serving us and we will no longer tolerate that. Well, Kathy and Pratik, thank you so much for joining me. And Pratik, I'm glad that I promoted you, and apologies to the real vice president of CCLBINY. But I move people around and promote them, and, you know, I have yet to do a marriage ceremony, but hey, you know, you never know. It could happen.
That could be fun. Do it. Okay.
Yeah, we'll get you and Frank to renew your vows on my show.
Ooh. There you go. Hey, there we go. Got 4 more years and we can do it.
All right.
We can do that? Okay.
There you go.
I just want to give out our website again.
Yes,
before
please.
We go. It's www.acbny.org. And if anyone is interested in coming to the convention, they can register online, or I will give out my email address and send them a copy of the registration packet. And that email is the letter kcasey03@nycap.rr.com. And that is, if anyone is interested in coming, I can email them the copy of the registration packet.
Perfect. And I want to thank both of you for being my first affiliate guests. This is a program that I would, if they don't arrest me first from, I don't know, Pratik, where are you? My goodness. But if this is a regular series I would like to initiate on the Marlena program, thanks to an idea from Kathy Casey, actually, when she wrote to me some time ago and said, you know, we'd like to do this. And I thought, by darn, you know, I'd like every affiliate, be it national or state, on my show to sing their praises and, you know, just tell people what you're doing. So I appreciate that you guys were the first, and I hope you have a great convention.
Thank you very much, and thank you for asking us.
All right, have a good night, and Pratik, go home.
I am home, actually. I'm just outside.
Okay, well, get in. Thanks, you guys.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Oh, they are such sweet people. Such nice people. Kathy Casey and Pratik Patel were my guests in this first hour. And at the top of the second hour, where we are now, we're going to be hearing in just a moment from Stephen Guerra, the secretary of the National Beep Baseball Association. Stephen will be with us right after this.
ACB Radio Interactive's birthday is coming soon, but you could get the gift. Get into the stream of things and win the Victor Reader Stream from Humanware at ACB Radio.
Woohoo!
You've never seen so many features in such a small package. Take your computer book and music libraries with you anywhere on a device that fits in the palm of your hand. Access Daisy and Bookshare books using Stream's built-in text-to-speech and standard Daisy navigation levels. Play and record audio files with Stream's built-in voice recorder. Store and access as many files as your removable SD flash card can hold. Enjoy the stream for 15 hours continuously using the rechargeable and user-replaceable batteries. Easily move files between the stream and your computer. Easily access all stream functions with highly contrasted tactile keys and audio feedback. All this can be yours thanks to the generosity of Humanware, manufacturers of the Victor Reader Stream. Send us an email message to contest@acbradio.org telling us in 75 words or less why having a Victor Reader Stream would benefit you at work, at school, at home, or at play. Be sure to include your name, address, and telephone number along with your email address. The winner will be called on the Marlena program on September 10th, just after 1 UTC. That's September 9th, just after 9 p.m. Eastern in North America. You must be available to receive the call in order to win. General ACB radio contest rules apply. For more information about the Victor Reader Stream, you can find a link on our website at www.acbradio.org. Again, the email address to send entries is contest@acbradio.org. Tell us how you would benefit from a Victor Reader Stream. Be available for that call from Marlena. And you may just be celebrating ACB Radio Interactive's birthday in a big way by winning the Victor Reader Stream for yourself.
Excludes Humanware and Corner.
You're listening to Marlena at the mainstream of acbradio.org and WTNDLP Macomb 106.3 FM. Information on how you can donate to ACB Radio is available at our webpage, www.acbradio.org. And thank you for listening to ACB Radio, where your listening is our business.
ACB Radio World is pleased to be able to broadcast the 32nd National Beep Baseball Association World Series. The game was played in Rochester, Minnesota. Competing for the title in the championship game were the Kansas All-Stars and the West Coast Dogs. Beep baseball is played with six blindfolded or totally blind players on each team, with the pitcher, catcher, and two field spotters being sighted. Verbal tips from the spotters assist players in locating the bases or ball, which all emit audible beeps. You can hear the play-by-play of the championship game on ACB Radio World on Saturday, September 1st at 0 hours Universal. That's 7 p.m. Central, Friday, August 31st, with repeat airings on Saturday, September 1st at 12 and 23 hours Universal. That's 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. Central on September 1st. Don't miss a minute of the action of the 32nd National Beep Baseball World Series game. airing Saturday, September 1st on ACB Radio World.
Stephen Guerra, who is a familiar voice to the Marlena program. Good evening, Steve.
Good evening, Marlena. Thank you for having me on ACB Radio. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, but also just to speak with you.
Well, it's always a pleasure to speak with you and have your dulcet tones here on ACB Radio. But tonight we're going to talk about something that we haven't really discussed, at least in depth, you and I, before, although I've had Doc Ed Bradley on the show last year to talk about this, and that is the Beat Baseball Association, the National Beat Baseball Association. What is that? What is the NBBA?
The National Beat Baseball Association is an organization that promotes the opportunity for individuals either with low vision or no vision to engage and play a competitive, competitive and adaptive form of baseball. The form of baseball that uses a beeping ball and buzzing bases. And it all started way back with the invention of the beat baseball, or beat ball for that matter, by Charlie Fairbanks, who's a telecom pioneer back in 1964. And he initially created the ball for his daughter to be included or have the opportunity to play with the other kids in her neighborhood. And then probably right at about 1975 or so, 1974, in that time frame, a person by the name of John Ross and others, Bill Gibney, all started to formulate and try to make a sport of the use of the beat ball, or beat baseball. And they devised some rules, and they got about a dozen people together in Chicago, and they devised a set of rules for playing this sport and of adaptive baseball with buzzing bases and a beeping ball. And they had their first World Series in 1976 in Minneapolis-St. Paul between the team from Phoenix, which was the team that Bill Gibney ran, and a team from St. Paul, Minnesota, St. Paul Gorillas. And the final score of that game was 38-35.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was a very high-scoring game. But the National Baseball Association, from that whole World Series and from those 12 gentlemen getting together and devising a set of rules, created the National Baseball Association. And then it really became, as a parent organization to it, to teams throughout the United States, because the sport started to grow over the years, and they became in existence as a national organization in 1982. So the national organization really has been there from the very onset, and there was those, if you will, 12 founding fathers that devised the rules and all the logistics of not only the national organization, but also just to the set of rules that are pretty much used still to today, for that game to be played on a competitive national and international level. But now, at least for the last several years, we've had a team from Taiwan or several teams from Taiwan take part in our World Series. So it has definitely an international flavor.
How very cool. Now, give me an example of how a rule might differ, say, in beat baseball and in actual, I don't want to say real baseball, because beep is every bit as real. So.
Yeah, Major League Baseball. I mean, beep baseball, beep ball, a lot of people call it either-or term, is a variation of both softball and baseball. In beat baseball, the rule is that there are six innings in a game, and you would generally have seven in softball and nine in baseball. In beat baseball, you're given four strikes and one pass ball, or one take for that matter, where in baseball, you have three strikes and four balls. In beat baseball, there are two bases that buzz, and they're aligned down the first and third baseline at 100 feet, where in baseball, in softball too, you have first, second, and third. And they're at, you know, baseball's at 90 feet, and I think softball's at 60 feet or something to that degree, something to that measurement. But beat baseball, what makes it different from baseball and softball is in order to promote safety and also to prevent any injuries of players running into each other, the field of play where the ball is hit into, where the defense is, generally is not, you don't have very often a situation where a batter who hits the ball will run into the field of play, because the bases are 10 feet in foul territory and 100 feet from home plate. So if the player or the batter, when they connect with the ball, if they make a straight line to that base, whether it be first or third, and I'll get into that in a minute, they generally will stay out of the field of play or out of fair territory. The bases buzz, where the ball emits a rapid beep. And, again, that's different from the game of baseball because, of course, baseball uses a hard ball and the bases certainly don't buzz.
Sure. Well, sometimes they do, but not on purpose.
Yeah, usually that's when they probably have when they've have a swarm of locusts or yellow jackets or something.
Or when our former wonderful manager Lou Piniella picks one up and throws it.
Yeah. Well, Lou Piniella, from the days of he being a Yankee to the days of he being a manager, has always had a very hot temper.
Oh yeah. He picked a base up one day and he just heaved it, and then they threw him out of the game.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, but. So where beat baseball now, going back to that, the what's interesting about that, about the sport of beat baseball, is the pitcher and catcher are on their own team. So each batting team has their own pitcher and catcher. Unlike the regular game of baseball, of course, the pitcher's ideal pass gets to strike out the other side.
Yeah.
You know, the less ideal opportunity here is that you don't want the pitcher to strike out the side on your own team. The object is to have the pitcher pitch in the area where the batter is swinging to maximize the opportunity of hitting the ball. So the better the pitcher is, the more runs your team will score or the more times you will put the ball in play.
Now, is the pitcher usually sighted?
Yeah, the pitcher and catcher are sighted, and I'll get into another sighted individuals on the field in a minute. But the pitcher, unlike baseball, the pitcher stands 60 feet 6 inches from home plate. Well, in beat baseball, the pitcher stands actually 20 feet from home plate. So not only does he stand that close to maximize the opportunity of the batters hitting the ball, but the opportunities increase or the chances increase of the pitcher actually getting hit by a hit ball. And sometimes, you know, there are pitchers in the league that wear protective face mask helmets like hockey players or goalies for that matter. And there are some pitchers that just go all or nothing. They go with no protective gear.
And, wow.
There's a gentleman that was on the winning the second place team this year, West Coast Dogs. His name is Tim Hibner. Probably one of the finer pitchers in the game today. But he, a couple years ago, took a ball and got hit in the nose with a beat ball, and it broke his nose.
Oh, my
gosh. He put it right back into place and packed it in and continued to pitch.
Wow,
and
my gosh. And
luckily for him, that year his team also lost the World Series championship game, but they played two games. But Tim has been around the sport since 1983, so he's a well-defined pitcher, and he knows when the hell to get the hell out of the way of the ball that's flying at him. Well, he'll try for that matter.
Wow, that's amazing. I think that takes guts because, no offense, but if I were the pitcher and I had all these blind or low vision people batting balls back at me, I think I'd wear armor. I'm not sure.
Well, some people do.
Wow.
A person like Kevin Barrett, who's the pitcher, who used to pitch for the Cleveland Scrappers, used to wear a lot of body protection, and he was probably one of the better pitchers. And the way they gauge a pitcher is the amount of batters the pitcher will face during a World Series tournament. And also, of course, the least amount of strikeouts, the higher the average and percentage the pitcher has, because the more balls he's having hit and put in play, and more runs, of course, he's going to score. The other two-sided people, or other sided person I mentioned that I went off on tangent before from, is a field spotter. Unlike baseball, when you have nine players out in the field, and beat baseball, you only have six players. And of course, in order to level the playing field, all the players, whether it be batting or in the field, have to wear a blindfold. So you can have individuals who have low vision, who have corrective vision, and then you have them mixed in with players who are totally blind. Ideally, the best beat baseball team are all totally blind players, so there's no hints that anyone's going to probably take advantage of the situation by using a blindfold. Mm-hmm. And using a blindfold to their advantage so that maybe they could see the game of play. You want the field to be as level as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
So the sighted individual that's on the field in beat baseball is known as a field spotter. Some defenses call for one and some defenses call for two. And what they initially do is they set the field up in a numerical zone from one to six. And the field spotter is allowed, according to the rules, to call out a number about where the ball is being directed when it comes off the bat.
Oh, sure. Okay, yeah.
So hypothetically, for argument's sake, straight up the middle, behind the pitcher, towards second base, the imaginary second base that's not there,
mm-hmm.
that would be considered a three.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a ball that's hit into shallow, if not deep center, a field spotter might be inclined just to say three or
mm-hmm.
six.
Sure.
Generally, the deep center field is usually the number six player. But it's all very... very organized, and it's like I said, some teams use two field spotters, one for the left side and one for the right side, and some teams just use one field spotter. But it's the way for the defense to know exactly what's going on, or get a secondary assistance in trying to track the ball so they can stop the ball. Now, the object, of course, is to score runs and to win the game, where if a batter puts a ball in play, the defense, it, of course, needs to stop that ball and stop the runner from getting to the base. Well, they're not throwing to first base like in baseball, but what happens is if, Marlena, you were to hit the ball and first base turned on, it would be a foot race between you and the defense. If you got to the base before the fielders or the defense fielded the ball, it would be a run. If the defense picked up the ball, if someone dove across the field and stopped the ball with their body, like which is ideally the situation, and they picked up the ball and showed to the umpire that they have a clean possession of the ball, before you got to the base, it would be an out. There are three outs in an inning, and like I said before, the games last about six innings unless there's a tie, and then extra innings are played until there's a clear defined winner.
Boy, that is very fascinating. Now, how many teams are there, let's say, in the U.S., for example?
Overall, in 2007, there are 17 registered teams. One of them is from Taiwan. Unfortunately, they couldn't attend this year because of financial reasons. But in the United States alone, there are 16 teams. And I can tell you quickly, there are teams from Austin, Texas, Houston, Texas, and Tyler, Texas, a team from Chicago, Indianapolis, Cleveland, Columbus, Pennsylvania, situated in the Philadelphia area. The Long Island Bombers, which is my team in the Long Island greater New York area, the Boston Renegades. There is the West Coast Dogs, which is a team that's made up of people from both California and North Carolina. There was a registered team this year from Carolina called the Carolina Wildcards. They didn't attend the World Series, but they did register, and there's another registered team from Arkansas. There's also other teams from Kansas, from, let me see if I'm forgetting anyone, Colorado, the Colorado Storm. You have a team from Stockton, California. And you see, this is where I fall because
I think you've done a great job.
I don't always remember everybody.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Well, if someone is interested in starting a team, what do they need to do?
Well, ideally, unfortunately, this sport, beat baseball, is a bit costly because of the equipment. And of course, starting a team, there's a lot of different scenarios that come into play. Of course, you want to ideally try to have a pool of individuals who are either low vision or no vision who are interested in playing. Of course, you want to have a considerable amount of volunteers who are willing not only to pitch and catch and field spot, but also help in other ways with the team and or providing transportation to and from practice for the players. So ideally, I mean, you're looking for a minimum of about 5 or 6 volunteers who are willing to help out, if not more. And of course, you want to look for as many players as you possibly can. So you're looking for at a minimum of maybe 8 to 10 players in your local area. But then, of course, you also have to worry about fundraising, and you want to consider the opportunity of becoming a registered 501c3, which is a designation for nonprofit organizations. Therefore, you'll be able to, according to the IRS and to the government, to go out and fundraise and have a tax deduction provided for the people who do donate to you. But just give you some idea on some equipment. A set of bases that, of course, is needed for playing the sport runs about $530.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it's gone up considerably lately because of the increase in price of oil. The bases are made of vinyl covering. So, of course, it's an oil-based product.
Sure.
And then they have the bases stand about 4 feet tall, and they have foam cylinders inside of it with a wired mechanism of a buzzer that runs from the base to where the switch box is to turn on or off that base.
Now, who turns that base on?
It's usually a volunteer.
Okay.
The person's called a base operator.
Okay.
They sit there with a switch, much like it's like a toggle switch, and they have either turn it to the left or to the right for either first or third base.
Okay.
But the $530 is all inclusive of the wires and the switch box and the bases for that matter. So you're given that whole kit and caboodle. And usually the bases, if you take care of them in a reasonable way, and you don't leave them out in a soaking rain, or you find a dry, warm place while you're not practicing, they usually can last about a year to 3 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Beat baseballs are a little more fragile than the bases. The beat baseballs run about $35 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
They are a KPOC foam rubber. That in the middle of it is a hollowed center where the core, which is the beeping mechanism, fits in and is glued in to be held in place. And then there's a leather covering that's sewn over the top of it. So the beat baseball costing about $35, you'll probably need to start off about a dozen, and hopefully those will last you, but you'll have to have an ongoing pool of funds that you can keep on purchasing beat baseballs and or having the balls that you have, if they're broke, to have them repaired. But there's a tremendous cost. The biggest problems with any beat baseball team is the cost that go into running the team in terms of having bases and working beat baseballs. And, of course, the biggest task is you want to play other beat baseball teams. You know, if you're in San Diego,
right,
California, you can play so much against each other, but you want to have the opportunity of taking another team. So traveling is also another big cost, because I'll give you a perfect example. Up until 2000, maybe 2001, the Long Island Bombers really didn't take on any other teams in our area because we didn't have any other teams in the northeast quadrant of the United States until Boston came along. Now that Pennsylvania is here, we regularly play each other, and it allows the teams to grow, to see what they have to work on, and they can grow so when they go to the national tournament, or the World Series for that matter, they can participate on a grander scale.
And do both men and women play?
Yes, they do. There can't say we have as many women as we would like to play beat baseball. but we have people such as Debbie Brummer, who's from the Kansas area. She's with the Topeka Gophers. We have Kalari Gertley, who's from Chicago. She's on the Chicago Comets. She didn't play this year, but we have a person I think you know is Christy Delmonico, who played on and off with the Tyler Tigers or the Colorado Storm. So, I mean, there are a few. And if I'm leaving any, and I'm sorry, there's also Nicole Sauter, who plays with the Chicago Comets, too. So they're there, but unfortunately, and just in my personal experiences, and any of the ladies who came out to start up with the Long Island Bombers, they came out and they tried out the sport, and they personally just chose not to take part in it anymore. So it wasn't where any teams shoo anybody away. And I want to go back and just so I don't leave her out. There's a young lady by the name of Pam on the Austin Blackhawks. So, I mean, the women are there.
Yeah.
And they're they're good players.
Ladies. Let's
exactly,
get out
we
there.
We
hurt
anyone. But, you know, if anyone's interested really in joining a team or finding a team in the area, they can send email to NB as in boy, B as in boy, A, P as in Paul, R, at MBBA.org. It's the public relations group. And they will assist you in trying to find you a team in your area. It will give you information on how you can go ahead and start up a team in your area. But all that information is also available on our website at mbba.org.
And we are going to do something very wonderful over the birthday weekend. Of course, the birthday weekend for ACB Radio Interactive is it coincides with the Labor Day weekend here in North America. And we are going to, on one of our streams, we are going to run the broadcast of the recent World Series. Is it the final game that...
Right, it's a championship game that was between the Kansas All-Stars and the West Coast Dogs, which was held on August 4th, 2007. It was amongst a dreary, very rainy and windy day, but the audio came out amazing.
Well, now don't tell us who won.
No, I'm not going to tell you who won.
It's
an exciting game, and you get to hear promos about the Beat Baseball podcast, which thankfully I started up about a year and a half ago, and I've interviewed a lot of great people from the MBBA, such as Ed Doc Bradley and Neil McDonald and Leonard Williams, and just people who have been synonymous with the sport of Beat Baseball from the onset of this sport. And our current president, Dave Smoker, was also interviewed as well. And the Beat Baseball podcast took part in an ACB radio show, Cooking in the Dark with Dale Campbell, and we talked about nothing but baseball park food.
Oh, I love it.
So, if anyone, the Beat Baseball podcast link can be found on the nbba.org website. And if you go to the beatbaseball.org website, you'll see a link for the most recent show for Cooking in the Dark, as you'll find it also with on Dale Campbell's website, Cooking in the Dark. .libsyn.com, but it's going to be a great show. We had play by play done by Kevin Simpson and color commentary by his brother Wayne Simpson, and two gentlemen who have been involved with Beat Baseball for quite a long time. I think Kevin started out in 1987 and as a young catcher, and Wayne started as a player in 1983, and now Kevin is the pitcher for the Austin Blackhawks, where Wayne is the captain of the Austin Blackhawks. And they, with their mom, were also recipients of the MBBA's prestigious award, the Jim Quinn Award, in 2002, which is just honoring excellence and dedication to the sport of Beat Baseball. And there's so much that can be said about any of the players and volunteers that take part in the sport, because everyone who's there wants to be there. Unlike Major League Baseball, there isn't any because they want to be there because they're being paid and it's a job for them. Everyone loves the sport, and it's the thrill of hitting the ball or running to the base at full speed without having any fear, or just diving across the field like it's your favorite baseball player and catching the ball either in your chest or in your glove if you wear one.
Well, Steve, I am very, very proud that we've been able to work this out this year. And what I want to tell our listeners to do is to keep looking on the list for the exact broadcast times. We're working those out right now, but they will be starting in North America. It would be the Saturday of Labor Day weekend. And we think that's just a great time when folks are at home. We're celebrating ACB Radio Interactive Birthday. And so, you know, you can switch back and forth between Interactive and the baseball game.
Sure,
and root your team on. We will have a link on the main ACB Radio page, so you don't have to worry about, oh, my gosh, where is it? I can't find it. Our great, wonderful web team of Jeff Bishop and Daryl Shandro are going to put a link up for us so you can get directly to the stream. We'll put the times that it's going to be broadcast up on the web page as well. And I can't wait. Now, are you playing in this game at all?
No, I wasn't of the honor or privilege to be on either one of these fantastic championship caliber teams. But
well,
my team fared well.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't win as many games as we would have liked to, but we did well. We gained. We grew in experience and character from this tournament. But it's I want to just say to all your listeners, and if I can say it, Marlene, is save the date for September 1st. While you're listening to ACB Interactive, by all means, when you see the times for the Beat Baseball podcast for the Quest 2007 Beat Baseball World Series Championship game between Kansas All-Stars and the West Coast Dogs, come over and check it out. I'm sure you'll love to hear the broadcast. It's it'll remind you like you're watching Fox Baseball on Saturday afternoon.
Well, Steve, you keep on playing ball, and I so appreciate your time to do this. And maybe next year we'll get it live.
Yeah, we would. I know I would love to take part in that, and love to work with ACB and radio and yourself to make that happen. And thank you again, Marlene. On behalf of the National Beat Baseball Association, to you and all your listeners, we're hoping that everyone gets excited and listening to the sport and wants to live the life dream of the sport of baseball if they can, and we can find you a local team in your area. And we'd love to grow the NBBA to a larger membership. We're a membership of 300 strong now, and we'd like to grow that, but every bit helps. If it's just one or if it's 100, every bit will help. But we appreciate you allowing us to come on your show and talk about the NBBA and also about this wonderful podcast.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you, Marlena.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, 'cause it's Root, Root, Root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old.
Oh, what a great, great person is Stephen Guerra. He gave of his time on a late evening for him, a work day. And you never would have believed that this guy was working all day and didn't get home until after 7:30 his time. And he was right ready to go and do that interview. So thank you so much, Stephen Guerra. We are an open forum. The number to call, 866-666-7926. That's 866-666-7926. If you want to talk about Beat Baseball, if you want to talk about whatever you want to talk about, this is the time to do it. There's been some interesting talk on the list this week about the educational opportunities for students who are visually impaired. And some of it is a little distressing. It appears that there is more than just the occasional instance of a student being given a pass when perhaps they shouldn't have been given that pass or received at least the high grade that they received. What do you think about that? Is this another argument that would go against mainstreaming? Would this happen in a school for the blind? Certainly everything that's being discussed on the list is happening in a mainstreaming situation. We have a call. Let's bring him in. Hi, this is Marlena. Who's this?
Marlena, this is Steve Garrigan. How are you?
Steve Garra.
Marlena, you sounded awesome on that interview.
You didn't do so bad yourself there, buddy.
I have to go back and say, when I was listening to Kathy Casey and Pratik Patel, who they're like a Rolling Stone that gathers no moss.
I know,
keep
aren't
on
they
moving
wonderful?
And moving and moving.
Aren't they wonderful?
Absolutely. I wanted to tell you, and you don't sound like a grandma. I could have sworn you're not over the day over 30.
Oh, I love you.
I wanted just to throw in, and there was two young ladies that I unfortunately forgot during our interview that I want to give them recognition, but they're two fine ladies playing with the Stockton Stingrays, the baseball team. That's Jennifer Boylan and Rita Carter Overstreet. And I've seen them grow over the last 4 years, and they've developed the Stockton Stingrays and have brought that team to at least the last two or three World Series, and they've done well. They've grown as a team, and they're certainly showing a mark in the world of beat baseball. So I wanted to say that those are two other ladies that are of the in addition to the five that I mentioned on our interview
that
should be given recognition.
Cool.
So yes, women do belong and do exist in beat baseball, and we welcome even more.
Come on. There's only seven. We need more.
So when are you going to start your team in Seattle?
Oh yeah, right. I don't know. I was sitting there listening to the interview, and I was thinking, now if we started one in Seattle, we could call it the Seattle Seafarers.
You can call it whatever you want. It doesn't take much to register a team. You have to register your team name by March 1st for $25, and then you can just build your own team. But you can call them whatever you want. It could even be I don't know, the Seattle Coffee Drinkers.
Maybe I'll start a team of old blind people. We'll call it the Seattle Old Folks.
Hey, whatever you want to do. Thank you again, Marlena. I just want to say I'm looking forward to listening. I'm glad I heard the promo kit with Steve Bauer came out amazing.
Oh, everything and, Steve Bauer does is amazing. Steve Bauer is magic.
It is. And then have a good rest of the show. And I just want to chime in one thing. I think in terms of education, it always mainstreamed all throughout regular public school, and I think the mainstreaming of students today is a good thing, but it has to be done in a very structured environment, and it has to be done with the student in mind, not because they're needing to keep up with the state quotas or the state programs. It's when something like that happens, when you're doing something because you're needing to meet the state requirements, it's not because it's not keeping the student's best interest in mind. If the student at some point can't necessarily acclimate to a public or to a normal environment of education, they might need that resource room. They might need that extra help. And it's, growing up here in New York, I had an itinerant teacher by the name of Corinne Morris, who was an absolutely amazing woman. And in addition to regular schoolwork, I learned access technology, and that's starting out with the Opticon back in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
So with her inclusion of that into a normal days of school for me, it made it easier for me to not only socially but also being able to interact with other students who may have not been visually impaired or who didn't have a designated or classified disability. So mainstreaming, mm-hmm. I think, is great, but it has to be done with the student's best interest in mind, and that's a coordinated effort between teachers and also parents. The parents have to be part of that, and it can't just be one-sided.
Exactly, and I think one of the problems with mainstreaming these days is that it doesn't happen that way.
No.
And I know from my working with HumanWare, I would travel around the country and meet all these so-called vision teachers, which is a title that just rankles me, you know. But
yes.
Anyway, I would meet all these vision teachers, and so many of them had terrible Braille skills. Just
yeah.
horrible Braille skills. And in their defense, you know, they didn't always have blind kids in their classes, and so the Braille would disintegrate, and then all of a sudden they've got a blind kid, and you know, I don't know. It seems like the system for educating our blind youth is really broke up bad, and it needs to be fixed.
Agreed. I'm going to sign off here, but have a great night, Marlena, and we'll be listening next Saturday.
All righty.
Thanks,
Steve. Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. Hi there. You're with Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, this is Nick from San Jose, California.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Very good, actually.
Good.
So I actually am very new to the ACB radio.
Well, welcome.
This is like my very first time listening. I'm proud there's an internet radio station out there who will connect the blind community, because there certainly aren't any that you can find out on your FM or AM radio dial.
Boy, ain't that the truth,
it's
huh?
It's not there.
Yeah, yeah. So this is your first time listening to this show?
Yeah, it's my first time listening to anything.
Very cool. Hey, that is so cool. Now, we have a little tradition on this show, and since it's your first time listening to anything, you get a double. Very cool. Now, you sound like a younger guy. Are you in school?
I am.
And what grade are you?
I am in seventh,
going into eighth. Wow. Wow. And are you totally blind, or do you have any sight?
I have no sight. I have light perception, though.
Yeah, yeah. So are you a Braille user?
Yes. I use the Braille remote.
Ah, good choice. Good choice indeed.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, do you go to public school, I presume?
I do.
And do you have a teacher that works with you specifically in school?
Yes, I do.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I have a PI teacher, yeah.
Yeah, that's really good.
Plus an aide.
Oh, now tell me about the aid, because you see, when I was in school, it was, you know, 922 years ago, but we didn't have aids. So what does your aid do for you?
My aid basically just walks me to classes and just helps me with work.
Okay. But how does your aid help you with work?
If we get a worksheet and print, she'll help me out with it. I have a laptop that I use, so she carries that around for me. And I have Joshua Windows installed on that laptop.
Uh-huh.
So, I love the JAWS software. You know, it's kind of weird, so I actually live in two houses. So, I have one house, just the house I'm at now, actually, I have JAWS 5. At the other one, I have JAWS 8.
Oh, dear.
I know.
Wow, there's quite a difference between the 5 and the 8, isn't there?
It's basically a difference between being able to minimize an application and get back to it,
yeah,
and not being able to minimize an application.
Yeah, 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 I hear you. I hear you.
I'm really interested in accessible gaming. I play a lot of audio games.
Oh, okay. All right.
I must say, I have a brother who's really into like video gaming. He's got the whole PlayStation 2 thing down, the Xbox,
yeah,
all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I must say, I'm rather disappointed. I think that there should be, you know, there should be a game that's made closer to, you know, being mainstream. The most complex game we have now is GMA Lone Wolf, which is basically, it's a World War
Now, are you able to play that?
I am. Yeah. Since I have Jaws, I'm able to play those.
Do you? But you don't play that on the PlayStation, right?
No, you can't. But you have to load it onto your computer.
So there aren't any games that you can play on the PlayStation.
None.
That's really, really crummy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very sad. And it's really sad that those big shots, the accessible gaming companies, not the accessible game, the video game companies, like, you know, Sony and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They don't fight it in their hearts to, you know, grant us accessibility in their games.
Well, now let me ask you a question, all right?
Yeah.
Have you written to them and told them this?
No, I have not.
Well, I want to encourage you to do that, Nick, because you know why? That's advocacy. That's, and as, you know, I don't want to sound like, you know, your grandmother here, but as you get older, you're going to find that there's a lot of stuff that we need to speak up about. And right now for you, an important issue is those darn games. And I think that it would be great if you did a little research on the web and you found out who to write to and you tell them, I am in the 7th grade, I am a completely blind person, and I think it's really sad that you have left me and other people like me out of your games.
Yeah.
I'd really love to see you do that.
I think I will do that.
And you know what? I'd love you to call me back and tell me, you know, if you did it. And then if you get an answer, maybe we can bring that person and you on my show.
That would be awesome.
You know, this is how we make a difference, you know?
That would be completely awesome.
Yeah.
So I noticed when I first tuned in that you were talking about Beat Baseball.
Yeah.
I'm not very – can you just give me a brief summary of – basically, what baseball is, I am, I don't want to sound cocky here, but I do play goalball.
Oh, you do?
Yes, and I have beaten a national goalball player. I've beaten him.
Oh, very cool.
So for anybody who plays goalball out there, you want to know what I did? I just rolled the ball when he wasn't looking, basically, and I scored a goal. I didn't go out of bounds. It was awesome.
Oh, very cool.
I challenged him one-on-one. Literally, I said, hey, come on.
Very
playing goalball. I don't care how many competitions you've been involved in. I want to play you.
Very cool.
And I won.
You know what? You've got a lot of moxie, kid. Well, let me tell you that next Saturday, ACB Radio is going to air the last game of the 32nd World Series, the 32nd Annual Beat Baseball World Series. And I'm going to be playing a promo here in a minute that will tell you the times and so forth of that game. And if you just go to acbradio.org and look on the front page, we'll be putting a link up and it'll have the times and it'll, you know, the link will probably say something like, click here to listen to the Beat Baseball World Series.
That will be awesome. I will be totally sure to tune into that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, you know, it's, they have a play-by-play broadcaster and then someone who's doing the color commentary, just like in a real, you know, baseball game.
Yeah, I'm actually a really big ice hockey fan.
Oh.
Yeah, so I come from San Jose. I'm a big Sharks fan. So anybody in the U.S. who likes the Sharks, well, good for you.
Well, good for you.
I actually have met the commentator and the color commentator.
Really?
I took a picture with them, and as of now, I have my pictures with them in a shadow box.
How cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool. So what do you think you want to do when you get out of school?
All right, I am, that is a big toss-up. My one goal is to become an anesthesiologist.
An anesthesiologist?
Yes.
Whoa, okay.
So, yeah, for anybody listening who thinks that I can't do it, I'm determined to do it.
Well,
I hope to God I am not the last.
You know that there have been other medical doctors who are blind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, wow. So, and what's your other goal?
My other goal is to technology is like my second life, basically.
Yeah.
I'm really into just technology. I have a lot of techie friends I hang out with who are also blind.
Yeah.
So I would love to really develop some audio games.
You know, you need to talk to Kelly Sapergia.
I've heard of him.
Yeah.
I have heard the name.
Yes. Well, Kelly,
yeah, I've actually heard audio reviews by him.
Yeah, well,
Doesn't he live in, like, Saskatchewan?
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, he does. And he lives in a place called Moose Jaw.
I've heard of it.
I always say Moose Drool.
Canada.
But Kelly has an ACB Radio Interactive show. And so I bet if you sent an email to kelly@acbradio.org, he would get it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, you call me back and let me know what's going on with these letters that you're going to write. And I'm really challenging you to do this, to start your advocacy young, because, you know, it's a lifelong thing. And, you know, if we as blind people don't speak up and we don't make our voices heard, then we don't have too much room to complain.
Yeah.
So you get cracking on that and call me back and let me know what's happening with it.
Yeah. Lastly, can you tell me a bit about what this mainstream audio stream is and what your show's about?
Well, my show is, it varies from week to week. You know, and I try to have guests I think will be of interest to people who are blind. Mainstream is a talk and information stream. One program that you certainly should check out is Main Menu.
I've heard some of the shows.
Well, then you're on the right place. This is where it is. You'll hear it Tuesday night in the U.S. And you're on West Coast time, so that'll start at 6 o'clock.
Yep. Where is your broadcasting located?
I'm in Seattle, and Main Menu takes place in two places in Arizona. So we're all doing this over the web.
Yeah.
Some of our broadcasters are in Canada, some are in the UK, some are in Australia. We have one in Sweden. So you should also check out the ACB Radio Interactive stream also, because it's ACB Radio's birthday next weekend and we're having a contest.
Excellent.
All right?
I must say, ACB Radio is now my favorite internet station.
Oh, well, you're my favorite. You're the caller of the month there, Nick.
I must say that.
Well, you take good care, and thanks so much for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. I will keep listening.
All right. I'll wait for you to call me again.
I will not touch this keyboard.
Oh, don't touch that keyboard.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, what a great call. I think that's just fabulous. Okay, Nick, listen to this.
ACB Radio World is pleased to be able to broadcast the 32nd National Beat Baseball Association World Series. The game was played in Rochester, Minnesota. Competing for the title in the championship game were the Kansas All-Stars and the West Coast Dogs. Beat baseball is played with 6 blindfolded or totally blind players on each team, with the pitcher, catcher, and 2 field spotters being sighted. Verbal tips from the spotters assist players in locating the bases or ball, which all emit audible beeps. You can hear the play-by-play of the championship game on ACB Radio World on Saturday, September 1st at 0 hours Universal. That's 7 p.m. Central, Friday, August 31st, with repeat airings on Saturday, September 1st at 12 and 23 hours Universal. That's 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. Central on September 1st. Don't miss a minute of the action of the 32nd National Beat Baseball World Series game, airing Saturday, September 1st on ACB Radio World.
ACB ACB Radio Interactive's birthday is coming soon, but you could get the gift. Get into the stream of things and win the Victor Reader Stream from Humanware and ACB Radio.
Woohoo!
You've never seen so many features in such a small package. Take your computer book and music libraries with you anywhere on a device that fits in the palm of your hand. Access Daisy and Bookshare books using Stream's built-in text-to-speech and standard Daisy navigation levels. Play and record audio files with Stream's built-in voice recorder. Store and access as many files as your removable SD flash card can hold. Enjoy the stream for 15 hours continuously using the rechargeable and user-replaceable battery. Easily move files between the stream and your computer. Easily access all stream functions with highly contrasted tactile keys and audio feedback. All this can be yours thanks to the generosity of Humanware, manufacturers of the Victor Reader Stream. Send us an email message to contact@acbradio.org telling us in 75 words or less why having a Victor Reader Stream would benefit you at work, at school, at home, or at play. Be sure to include your name, address, and telephone number along with your email address. The winner will be called on the Marlena program on September 10th, just after 1 UTC. That's September 9th, just after 9 p.m. Eastern in North America. You must be available to receive the call in order to win. General ACB Radio Contest rules apply. For more information about the Victor Reader Stream, you can find a link on our website at www.acbradio.org. Again, the email address to send entries is contest@acbradio.org. Tell us how you would benefit from a Victor Reader Stream. Be available for that call from Marlena. And you may just be celebrating ACB Radio Interactive's birthday in a big way by winning the Victor Reader Stream for yourself.
Excludes Humanware and Thorns.
Well, we have done it for another week. I can't believe it. I'm Marlena. It's been a joy to have been with you this week. Remember the big birthday weekend bash coming up next week. Enter that contest for the Victor Reader Stream. I think they're a wonderful device. 75 words or less. What it would mean for you to have one at work, at home, at school, or at play. To contest at acbradio.org and put your name and address and email in there and phone number and be ready for me to call you on the 9th in the U.S., the 10th UTC time during this very time slot. Have a great week. We will not be live next week. Gary, the board guy, and I are going to take a Sunday off and celebrate Labor Day. But I'll pick a really popular show. If you've got one you'd like to hear, drop me a note. The email address is Marlena, M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, at acbradio.org. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you live in 2 weeks.